Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. Sitka police and school district officials met on Tuesday to review security procedure after last week's shooting at an elementary school in Connecticut. They say plans are in place for responding to a variety of situations, but that the real goal is to make sure that they never have to. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The conversation in Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt's office included talk of how police are prepared to respond to a violent situation at any of Sitka's schools, and we'll get to that shortly. But sitting at the conference table with Fire Chief Dave Miller, Mayor Mim McConnell, and School Superintendent Steve Bradshaw, the conversation kept coming back to the same topic.
Prevention is a huge thing.
Prevention is kind of the
prevention is huge.
The key to this, I think, we want.
That's really the best way that we can
prevention. Creating an atmosphere where the worst is least likely to happen. Fire Chief Dave Miller.
In all of these cases, or almost all of the cases, where there's been an active shooter in a school or a mall or some post offices or whatever, most of those cases, the shooter has let somebody else know that he's going to do this. Listen to what people have to say. You know, listen to your kids. They hear everything on the street or at school.
Police Chief Schmidt says his department builds trust with students by having an officer spend a lot of time in the schools getting to know them.
We have a school resource officer, Paul Overturf. He's a presence at the school. He's around the schools a lot. He was just there now when I was there a few minutes ago showing up. He does extra patrols around the schools and teaches classes inside the school.
Schmidt says having a school resource officer around lets children feel comfortable with the police. And in the past, that's come in handy.
I remember an incident we had a few years back where a gun was brought into the school. And because Sergeant Ed Green happened to be right there, he knew the kid, he knew the teacher, he knew, you know, there was a lot of trust there. And Ed was able to quickly defuse that incident.
Bradshaw, the superintendent, says the school district also works hard to make its buildings a welcoming place for students and for visitors.
At the same time, you know, and I know we've offended people at times when we say, okay, who are you and what are you doing here? And what, you know, but we have to do that at this point. And it's not that we don't welcome people into our buildings. At the same time, student safety is our number one concern.
All of Sitka's school buildings require visitors to check in at the main office, and schools run safety drills to teach students and teachers how to react to violent situations in or near a building. And yes, Schmidt says police have a response plan in case the worst happens.
The school has their plan on what to do as far as a drill if they have a violent incident in the school. We have our own response plan. Of course, it's pretty dynamic. We train for a specific, like, active shooter type event.
But every situation is different, he says. And without getting into specifics, Schmidt says the way police respond to shootings in general has changed since the 1999 attack at Columbine High School in Colorado.
The old response before Columbine was to set a perimeter around a school or whatever place where they had the violence was happening and then call for help and have a SWAT team go in.
Now, though, the approach is much more active. Police are trained to neutralize a threat as quickly as possible. Of course, all four community leaders said on Tuesday that the ultimate goal is to create an atmosphere where none of it ever needs to be used. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Outside the walls of Sitka's school buildings and beyond the shores of Baranof Island, larger conversations are taking place about what a community could or should do to respond to situations like the one that happened at Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut. Mayor Mim McConnell says she understands the impulse to act, even in a community more than 2,800 miles away from last Friday's tragedy.
You know, whenever we're faced with something that is so inexplicable and just so horrible even to think about, we feel like we're helpless. And I think it's important for people to not feel helpless, that they can do things to help.
Others are having informal chats about mental health care, education, and gun laws. McConnell thinks Sitka is well positioned to have a constructive conversation.
We're a pretty diverse community, and we have been very divided on things in the past, but I like to think that the dialogue and the openness to have conversations has improved, that people are a little more willing to listen to what people have to say, that even if they may not agree.
Sitka Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt says addressing the issue of school violence is not just a police issue. It's a community one. And he says residents of Sitka, more than any place he's lived before, are engaged in their community.
Whether it's bears or drugs or whatever issue we have in the community, there are people willing to step up and talk about it and try to come up with answers. So I feel confident in our ability to face this issue as well.
The voices of community leaders talking about Sitka's response to last week's school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Affordable housing advocates in Sitka are looking at a new strategy for leveling the market for low and middle-income homebuyers. Community land trusts have been around for about 30 years in the U.S., but are only recently getting traction in Alaska. Michael Brown is a community land trust consultant with Burlington Associates, who met with Sitka's municipal government at the fire hall on Tuesday evening and spoke to the Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. He also appeared on KCAW's morning interview, where he explained the rationale for creating community land trusts.
The reality is housing is expensive, and it's getting more expensive over time, which is leaving more and more people in challenging situations. And at the same time, we have less resources. So there's this sort of search for how do we be creative and effective in addressing the needs, and community land trusts provide sort of a unique opportunity for that. Community land trusts at their very core are community-based organizations. They don't have to be new organizations. They can be part of an existing organization. But the focus of community land trust is to make sure that housing, once we've gone to the hard work and the substantial investment of making housing affordable in the first place, it's making sure that that home remains affordable from transfer to transfer, from household to household. A homeowner moves in, they can live there as long as they want, but when they move out, we want to make sure that the benefit that was provided to them, the affordability that was provided to them, is available for that incoming buyer.
A community land trust, or CLT, insulates buyers from the real estate market somewhat. Someone who purchases a home in a CLT buys only the structure itself. The land remains with the trust, and buyers understand that their investment, which could appreciate or depreciate like any real estate investment, is subject to an agreement with the trust rather than market forces. Brown says transparency is critical when communities set up CLTs.
The community land trust retains ownership of the land but sells the home to a household that they're targeting and then lease the land that the home sits on to that homeowner by means of a ground lease that's typically 99 years in length, that can be passed from heir to heir on down, and at the end of the first 99-year term can be extended for a second 99-year term. And the reason that the Community Land Trust, on behalf of the community that it serves, retains ownership of the land is it allows that Community Land Trust to specify certain expectations about the homeowner's use and occupancy of the property during the time that they live there. And then should they ever choose to sell, it allows the Community Land Trust a preemptive option to purchase that home. And the process of the resale is controlled by a formula that's fully disclosed. There's a variety of ways that can be structured, but all of them assume that the homeowner should get back, when they sell their home, should get back whatever they put into the home, whatever investment they made by their down payment or by paying off the principal balance on their affordable mortgage, and that they should get some share, some portion of any increase in the value of the property during they live there, because the right of equity is one of the rights of home ownership. But they're allowed a share, a percentage, a portion of the increase in the value.
Brown works with community land trusts all over the country. He says trusts are not for people who can already afford to buy homes on the open market. He says CLTs often serve people who serve their communities, teachers, firefighters, and social workers, who do essential work but whose salaries may not keep up with the real estate market. He says once people understand how community land trusts work, they typically embrace the idea.
The opportunity to live in a home of their own, to have the security and stability and the chance to build some equity or not, right? So there's nobody that forces the arrangement. It's simply laid out as an alternative. And historically, what we see in community land trusts around the country, I have the great fortune of being able to work with community land trusts across the country, and we see that home buyers readily and easily want to do it because their interest is in owning a home in the community in which they work, in a community in which they want to send their kids to school.
To hear more of this conversation with Community Land Trust Consultant Michael Brown, visit our website at kcaw.org. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says it has no timetable for completing its review of the impacts of large-scale mining in the Bristol Bay region. The agency released a draft watershed assessment in May and had hoped for a final report as early as year's end. EPA said yesterday that it's updating the assessment in response to over 230,000 public comments and comments from a peer review panel. EPA said it hasn't set a new timeline for completing that work. The assessment stemmed from concerns about developing a large copper and gold prospect near the headwaters of Bristol Bay in southwest Alaska. EPA has said the study isn't about one project, like the proposed Pebble Mine. The study was criticized by pro-development groups, the state, and others who called EPA's actions premature and an overreach. That's it for Raven News for this hour. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka. A quick check with the weather forecast for Sitka and Port Alexander today. Mostly cloudy. Some scattered snow showers expected this morning. Highs around 35 degrees with northeast winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, decreasing clouds. Lows 18 to 26. Northeast winds to 10 miles an hour. And Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny, highs around 30 degrees on Friday with northeast winds at 10 miles an hour. Friday night, we're having a forecast of partly cloudy skies, lows 20 to 26 with northeast winds to 10 miles an hour. Good morning and thanks for being with us this